You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. And please consider patronizing SteinerBooks.org or RudolfSteinerPress.com in London. They are the two publishing houses that bring Steiner in English to us. And this is a reading of a cycle of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled Harmony of the Creative Word, the Human Being and the Elemental, Animal, Plant, and Mineral Kingdoms in four parts. This is the last lecture of part three, which is entitled, part three is entitled The Plant World and the Elemental Nature Spirits. This is lecture nine, given on the 4th of November, 1923. This volume, I should also add, is Collected Works, Volume 230, formerly known as Man as Symphony of the Creative Word, revised translation by Matthew Barton. Lecture 9. We come to know the beings of the sense world by observing the way they live and act. And it is the same with the beings about which I have been speaking, and shall continue to speak in these lectures, the elemental beings of nature. Invisibly and supersensibly present, behind what is physical and perceptible to the senses, they participate in all the happenings of the world just as, or rather in a higher sense than, do physical sense-perceptible beings. Now you will readily be able to imagine that to these beings the world appears somewhat different than it does to the beings of the sense world, for they do not possess a physical body as the latter do. Everything which they grasp or perceive in the world must be different from what enters the human eye, i.e., for example. This is indeed the case. The human being experiences the earth, for instance, as the cosmic body on which he moves about. He even finds it slightly inconvenient when, through some atmospheric condition or other, as occasionally happens, this cosmic body becomes softened, and he sinks into it, even slightly. He likes to feel the earth as something hard, as something into which he does not sink. This whole way of experiencing things, this whole attitude toward the earth, is, however, completely alien to the gnomes. They sink down everywhere, because, for them, the whole earth body is primarily a hollow space through which they can pass. They can penetrate everywhere. Rocks and metals present no hindrance to their way of, shall I say, walking about or swimming about. There are no words in our language which really express the way the gnomes move about inside the body of the earth. It is just that they have an inner experience, an inner perception of the different ingredients of the earth. When they wander along a vein of metal, they have a different experience from when they make their way through a layer of limestone. All this, however, the gnomes feel inwardly, through all such things they penetrate unhindered. They have not the least idea that the earth exists. Their idea is that there is a space in which they perceive certain experiences. The experience of gold, the experience of mercury, of tin, of silica, and so on. This is to express it in human language, not in the language of the gnomes. Their language is far more perceptive, and it is just because their whole life is spent in journeying along all the veins and seams, continually journeying through them, that they acquire the very pronounced intellectuality about which I have spoken to you. Through this they acquire their comprehensive knowledge, for the metals and the earth reveal everything to them of what is outside in the universe, as though in a mirror they experience everything which is outside in the universe. But for the earth itself the gnomes have no perception, only for its different ingredients, and for the different kinds of inner experience which these offer. Because of this, the gnomes have a quite particular gift for receiving the impressions which come from the moon, it is toward the moon that they continually direct their attentive listening. And in this respect, they have a, I cannot say congenital, it is so difficult to find the right words, but acquired neurasthenia, nervous debility. Of course, what for us is an illness is for these gnomes their actual life element. For them, this is no illness, but simply a matter of course. It is what gives them that inner receptivity toward all the things of which I have spoken. But it also gives them their inner receptivity toward the phenomena connected with the phases of the moon. They follow the changes in the moon cycle with such close attention, I have already described their power of attention to you, that it actually alters their form. When, therefore, one follows the existence of a gnome, one gains a quite different impression at full moon from that gained at new moon and again at the intermediate phases. At full moon, the gnomes are ill at ease. Physical moonlight does not suit them. And at that time, they thrust the whole feeling of their existence outward. They circumscribe themselves, as it were, with a spiritual skin. At full moon, they push the feeling of their existence toward the boundary of their body. And in full moonlight, if one has imaginative perception for such things, they really appear like little shining mail-clad knights. They are clad in a kind of spiritual armor, and this it is which pushes outward in their skin to arm them against the moonlight, which makes them feel so uncomfortable. But when the time of new moon approaches, the gnomes become positively transparent, wonderful to see, inwardly irradiated with a glittering play of colors. One sees within them, as it were, the processes of a whole world. It is as though one were to look into the human brain, not as an anatomist investigating cell tissues, but as one who perceives inside the brain the shimmering and sparkling of thoughts. That is how these transparent little folk, the gnomes, appear to one, as though the play of thoughts is revealed within them. It is just at new moon that the gnomes are so particularly interesting, for each of them bears a whole world within himself, and one can say that within this world there actually lies the mystery of the moon. If one unveils this moon mystery, one comes upon truly remarkable discoveries. For one reaches the conclusion that at the present time the moon is continually coming closer. Naturally, you must not take this in a crude way, as though the moon were moving toward the earth at a fast pace. But each year it does in fact come somewhat nearer. Each year the moon is actually slightly nearer to the earth. One recognizes this from the ever more vigorous play of the moon's forces in the world of the gnomes during the time of the new moon. And, to this coming nearer of the moon, the attentiveness of these goblins is quite specially directed. For in producing results from the way in which the moon affects them, they see their chief mission in the universe. They await with intense expectation the time when the moon will again unite with the earth. And they assemble all their forces in order to be armed in readiness for this time, when the moon reunites with the earth. For they will then use the moon substance gradually to disperse the outer substance of the earth into the universe. The substance must pass away. Because they hold this task in view, these goblins or gnomes feel themselves to be of quite special importance, for they gather together the most varied experiences from the whole of earth existence, and they hold themselves in readiness, when all earthly substance will have been dispersed into the universe, after the transition to Jupiter evolution, to preserve what is good in the earth's structure, in order to incorporate this in Jupiter as a kind of bony skeleton. You see, when one looks at this process from the aspect of the gnomes, one gains a first stimulus, a first capacity to picture how our earth would appear if all the water were taken away from it. Just consider how in the Western Hemisphere, everything is oriented from north to south, and how in the eastern hemisphere everything is oriented from east to west. Thus, if you were to do away with all the water, America with its mountains and what lies under the sea would appear as something which proceeds from north to south. And looking toward Europe, you would find that in the eastern hemisphere, corresponding to the chain of the Alps, the Carpathians, and so on, the orientation is in an east-west direction. You would get something like the structure of the cross in the earth. When one gains insight into this, one gains the impression that this is really the united gnome world of Old Moon. The ancestors of our earth gnomes, the moon gnomes, gathered together their moon experiences, and from them fashioned this structure, this firm structure of the solid fabric of the earth, so that the solid structure of the earth actually arose from the experiences of the gnomes of Old Moon. These are the things which reveal themselves in relation to the gnome world. Through them, the gnomes acquire an interesting, an extraordinarily interesting relationship to the whole evolution of the universe. They always carry over the solid element from one stage to the next. They are the preservers in evolution of the continuity of the solid structure, and thus they preserve the solid structure from one cosmic body to another. It is one of the most interesting studies to examine these supersensible spiritual beings and to observe their special task, for this gives one a first impression of how every kind of being existing in the world shares in the task of working on the whole form and structure of the world. Now, let us pass over from the gnomes to the undines, the water beings. Here a very remarkable idea presents itself. These beings do not have the need for life that human beings or animals have, nor the need for life that the animals have, however instinctively. But one could almost say that the undines, and also the sylphs, have a need for death instead. In a cosmic way, they are really like the gnat which casts itself into the flame. They only feel themselves to be truly alive when they die. This is extraordinarily interesting. Here on the physical earth, everything desires to live, for all that has vitality is prized, all that sprouts and shoots with life. But once we have crossed the threshold, all these beings say to us that it is death which is really the true beginning of life. This can be felt by these beings. Let us take the undines. You know, perhaps, that sailors, who travel a great deal on the sea, find that in July, August, and September in the Baltic, further to the west, this is already the case in June, the sea makes a peculiar impression, and they say that it is beginning to blossom. It begins to sprout, as it were, but it begins to sprout out of everything that is decaying in the sea. The process of decay in the sea makes itself felt. It imparts to the sea a peculiar putrescent smell. All this, however, is different for the undines. It causes them no unpleasant sensations, but when the millions and millions of water creatures which perish in the sea start decomposing, the sea becomes for the undines the most wonderful phosphorescent play of colors. It shines and glitters with every possible color. Especially does the sea glitter for them, inwardly and outwardly, in every shade of blue, violet, and green. The whole process of decomposition in the sea becomes a glimmering and gleaming of darker colors up to green. But these colors are realities for the undines. And one can see how in this play of colors in the sea they absorb the colors into themselves. They draw these colors into their own bodily nature. They become like them. They themselves become phosphorescent. And as they absorb the play of colors, as they themselves become phosphorescent, there arises in the undines something like a longing, and immense longing to rise upward, to soar upward. Upward they soar, led by this longing. And with this longing they offer themselves to the beings of the higher hierarchies, to the angels, archangels, and so on, as earthly sustenance. And in this sacrifice they find their bliss. They then live on within the higher hierarchies. And thus we see the remarkable fact that each year, with the return of early spring, these beings evolve upward from unfathomable depths. There they take part in the life of the earth by working on the plant kingdom in the way I have described. Then, however, they pour themselves, as it were, into the water, and take up, by means of their own bodily nature, the phosphorescence of the water, the decaying matter, and bear it upward with an intensity of longing. Then in a vast, in a magnificent cosmic picture, one sees how, emanating from earthly water, the colors carried upward by the undines, and which have spiritual substantiality, provide the higher hierarchies with their sustenance. How the earth becomes the source of nourishment, in that the very essence of the undines' longing is to let themselves be consumed by higher beings. There they live on. There they enter into their eternity. Thus every year there is a continual upstreaming of these undines, whose inner nature is formed out of the earthly sphere, and who radiate upward, filled with a longing to offer themselves as nourishment to higher beings. And now let us proceed to the sylphs. In the course of the year, birds die. I described to you how these dying birds possess spiritualized substance, and how they desire to give this spiritualized substance over to higher worlds in order to release it from the earth. But here an intermediary is needed, and these intermediaries are the sylphs. It is a fact that dying birds continually fill the air with astrality. This astrality is of a lower order, but it is nevertheless astrality. It is astral substance. In this astrality flutter, or hover might be a better word, in this astrality hover the sylphs. They take up what comes from the world of dying birds and carry it, again with a feeling of longing, up into the heights, only desiring to be breathed by the beings of the higher hierarchies. They offer themselves as that which supplies a breathing element to the higher hierarchies, again, a magnificent spectacle. With the realm of dying birds, this astral, inwardly radiant substance is seen to pass over into the air. The sylphs flash like blue lightning through the air, and into their blue lightning, which assumes first greener, then redder hues, they absorb the astrality which comes from the bird world, and dart upward like upward flashing lightning. And if one follows this beyond the boundaries of space, it becomes what is breathed by the beings of the higher hierarchies. Thus one can say that the gnomes carry one world over into another, as far as its structure is concerned. They go with evolution in a horizontal direction, as it were. This is merely an analogy. The other beings, the undines, the sylphs, carry upward what they experience as bliss in yielding themselves up to death, in being consumed, in being breathed. There they continue to live within the higher hierarchies, experiencing their eternity within them. And when we go on to the fire spirits, only think how the dust on the butterfly's wings seems to dissolve into nothing with the death of the butterfly. But it does not really dissolve into nothing. What is shed as dust from the butterfly's wings is the most highly spiritualized matter. And all this passes like microscopic comets into the heat ether which surrounds the earth. Each single particle of dust passes like a microscopic comet into the heat ether of the earth. when in the course of the year the butterfly world approaches its end. All this becomes glittering and shimmering, an inner glittering and shimmering. And into this glittering and shimmering the fire spirits pour themselves. They absorb it. There it continues to glitter and shimmer, and they too get a feeling of longing. They bear what they have thus absorbed up into the heights. And now one sees, I have already described this to you from another aspect, how the glittering and shimmering carried outward from the butterfly's wings by the fire spirits shines forth into world space. But it does not only shine forth, it streams forth, and it is this which provides the particular view of the earth which the higher hierarchies perceive. The beings of the higher hierarchies gaze upon the earth, and what they principally see is this butterfly and insect existence which has been carried outward by the fire spirits. And the fire spirits find their highest ecstasy in the realization that it is they who present themselves before the spiritual eyes of the higher hierarchies. They find their highest ecstasy in being beheld by the gaze, by the spiritual eyes of the higher hierarchies, in being absorbed into them. They strive upward toward these beings and carry to them knowledge of the earth. Thus we see how these elemental beings are the intermediaries between the earth and the spirit cosmos. We see the drama of the phosphorescent upsurge of the undines, which pass away in the sea of light and flame of the higher hierarchies as their sustenance. We see the upward flashing greenish-reddish lightning, which is breathed where the earth continually passes over into eternity, the eternal survival of the fire spirits, whose activity never ceases. For whereas here on earth birds tend to die at a particular time of year, the fire spirits make sure that what is to be seen of them pours out into the universe throughout the entire year. Thus the earth is as though cloaked in a mantle of fire. Seen from outside, the earth appears fiery. But everything is brought about by beings who see the things of the earth quite differently from how man sees them. As already mentioned, man's experience of the earth is of a hard substance on which he stands and walks about. For the gnomes it is a transparent globe, a hollow body. For the undines, water is something in which they perceive the phosphorizing process, which they can take into themselves as living experience. Sylphs see in the astrality of the air which emanates from dying birds something that makes them into more actively flashing lightning than they would otherwise be. For in itself the lightning of these sylphs is dull and bluish. And then again the disintegration of butterfly existence is something which continually envelops the earth as though with a shell of fire. Beholding this, it seems as though the earth were surrounded by a wonderful fiery painting. And there to one side, when one looks upward from the earth, one beholds these lightning flashes, these phosphorescent and evanescent undines. All this shows us that here on earth the elemental nature spirits move and work actively, striving upward and passing away in the fiery mantle of the earth. In reality, however, they do not pass away, but they find their eternal existence by passing over into beings of the higher hierarchies. All this, however, which ultimately appears like a wonderful painting of the world, is the expression of what happens on earth, for to begin with, and in its initial stages, it all takes place on the earth. We, human beings, are always present in what is there taking place. And the fact is, even if in his ordinary consciousness man is at first incapable of grasping what surrounds him, that every night we are involved in the movement and activity of these beings, that we ourselves take part as ego and as astral body in what these beings carry out. but it is the gnomes especially which really find it quite entertaining to observe a person asleep. Not the physical body in bed, but the person's astral body and ego outside his physical body. For what the gnomes see is someone who thinks in the spirit, but does not know it. He does not know that his thoughts live in the spiritual. And again, for the undines, it is inexplicable that man knows himself so little. The same is true for the sylphs, and likewise for the fire spirits. On the physical plane, you see, it is certainly often unpleasant to have gnats and the like fluttering around one at night. But the spiritual man, the ego and astral body, at night these are surrounded by the life and activity of elemental beings. And being thus surrounded by life and activity is a constant admonition to man to advance in his consciousness in order to know more about the world. Now, therefore, I can try to give you an idea of how these beings, gnomes, undines, sylphs, and fire spirits, flit about, of what happens when we begin to hear what amuses them in us, and of what they would have us do when they admonish us to advance in consciousness. Yes, you see, here come the gnomes, and speak somewhat as follows, quote, "You dream yourself, and shun awakening," close quote. The gnomes know that man possesses his ego as though in a dream, that he must first awaken in order to arrive at his true ego. They see this quite clearly and call to him in his sleep, quote, "You dream yourself," close quote. They mean during the day, continue, quote, "and shun awakening," close quote. Then there sounds forth from the undines, quote, "You think the deeds of angels," close quote. Man does not know that his thoughts are really with the angels. Continue, quote, "You think the angels and know it not," close quote. And from the sylphs there sounds to sleeping man, quote, "Creative might shines in you, you divine it not. You feel its strength," close quote, "the strength of creative might," continue quote, "and live it not," close quote. Such, approximately, are the words of the sylphs, the words of the undines, the words of the gnomes. The words of the fire spirits, quote, "Divine will offers you strength, you accept it not. With its strength you will," close quote, Steiner, "with the strength of divine will," continue quote, "yet thrust it from you," close quote. All this is the admonition to progress in consciousness. These beings which do not enter into physical existence wish man to make a move onward with his consciousness, so that he may be able to participate in their world. And when one has thus entered into what these beings have to say to man, one also gradually understands how they give expression to their own nature, somewhat in this way. The gnomes, quote, "I maintain the power of root nature. It creates for me the body of forms," close quote. The undines, quote, "I bestir the water's power of growth. It creates for me substance of life," close quote. The sylphs, quote, "I quaff the airy force of life. It fills me with the power of existence," close quote. And the fire spirits, it is very difficult to find any kind of earthly words for what they do, because their sphere is far removed from earthly life and earthly activity. Fire spirits, quote, "I consume the striving power of fire. Into spirituality of soul it releases me," close quote. Footnote here, Rudolf Steiner coined a word from verdauen, to digest, deuren, ich deure, to express not ordinary digestion, but a fiery consuming process. Readers aside, I'm trying to pronounce this doira, I think is how it's pronounced, but I don't know. It's spelled D-A-umlaut-U-E, and I apologize for mispronouncing that. End of readers aside, end of footnote. You see, I have endeavored, to the best of my ability, to give you an idea of how these beings of the elemental kingdom characterize themselves, and of the admonitions which they initially impart to man. But they are not so unfriendly to man as only to suggest to him what is negative by nature, but pithy and positive sayings also proceed from them. And we experience these sayings as being of immense, of gigantic significance. In such matters as these, you must acquire a sense for whether a saying is uttered merely in human words, however beautiful they may be, or whether it sounds forth as though cosmically, from the whole mighty army of the gnomes. What is important, what makes the difference, is the way such words arise, where they really come from. And when man hearkens to the gnomes, after they have uttered the admonitions which I have written on the board, then there sounds toward him from the massed chorus of the gnomes, quote, "Strive to awaken," close quote. Here the significance is the mighty moral impression created by such words when they stream through the universe, arising from the massed chorus of infinitely many single voices. And from the undine chorus resounds, quote, "Think in the spirit," close quote. With the chorus of sylphs, things are not so simple. When the gnomes appear like shining armored knights in full moonlight, there resounds from them, as though from the earth's depths, quote, "Strive to awaken," close quote. When the undines soar upward, filled with a longing to be consumed, then in this upsoaring there sounds back to the earth, quote, "Think in the spirit," close quote. But from the sylphs, in the heights as they allow themselves to be inhaled up above and seem to disappear in bluish, reddish, greenish lightning into cosmic light, flash into the light and disappear in it, there sounds down, quote, "Live and create breathing existence," close quote. And the words of the fire spirits resound as in fiery anger, an anger which is not felt to be annihilating, but rather as something which man must receive from the cosmos, as in fiery, but at the same time enthusiastic anger, they carry what is theirs into the fiery mantle of the earth. Here the sound is not like that of single voices massed together, but from the whole circumference there resounds as with a mighty voice of thunder, quote, "Receive in love the will power of the gods," close quote. Naturally, one can turn one's attention away from all this, and then one does not perceive it. Whether or not man does perceive such things depends upon his own free choice. But when man does perceive them, he knows that they are an integral part of cosmic existence, that something actually occurs when gnomes, undines, sylphs, and fire spirits manifest in the way described. And the gnomes are not only present for man in the way I have already portrayed, but they are there to let their world words sound forth from the earth, the undines to let their world words soar upward, the sylphs theirs downward from above, the fire spirits theirs like a chorus, like the massing of a mighty uplifting of voices. Yes, this is how it could sound when transposed into words. But these words belong to the world word. And even though we do not hear them with ordinary consciousness, these words are not without significance for mankind. For the primeval idea, which had its source in instinctive clairvoyance, that the world was born out of the Word is indeed a profound truth. But the world word is not some collection of syllables gathered from just a few sources. The world word sounds forth from a countless multitude of beings. Countless, countless beings have something to say in the totality of the world. And the world word sounds forth from the concordance of these countless beings. The general abstract truth that the world is born out of the Word cannot bring this home to us in its fullness. One thing alone can do this, namely that we gradually arrive at a concrete understanding of how the world Word, in all its different nuances, is composed of the voices of individual beings, so that these different nuances contribute their sound, their utterance, to the great world harmony, the mighty world melody, in the Word's act of creation. When the gnome chorus sounds forth its "strive to awaken," this translated into gnome language, is the force which is active in bringing about the human skeletal system and the system of movement in general. When the Undines utter, quote, "think in the spirit," close quote, they utter, translated into Undine, what pours itself as world word into man in order to give form to the metabolic organs. When the sylphs, as they are breathed, allow their, quote, "live and create breathing existence," close quote, to stream downward, there penetrates into man, moving and pulsating everywhere in him, the force which endows him with the organs of the rhythmical system. And if one attends to the fire spirit sounds that resound and stream in from the fire mantle of the world with a voice of thunder, then one finds that this sounding manifests as image or reflection. It streams in from the fire mantle, this sounding force of the Word. And the nerves and senses of every human being, every human head, we might say, is a miniature image of what, translated into the language of fire spirits, rings out as, quote, "receive in love the will power of the gods," close quote. This, quote, "receive in love the will power of the gods," close quote, is what is active in the highest substances of the world. When man is going through his development in the life between death and a new birth, this transforms what he brought with him through the gate of death into what will later be the human organs of the nerves and senses. So we have system of movement, chorus of gnomes, strive to awaken, metabolic organization, undines, think in the spirit, rhythmical system, sylphs, live and create breathing existence. Systems of nerves and senses, fire spirits, receive in love the willpower of the gods. Thus you see that what lies beyond the threshold is part of our own nature. You see how it takes us into the active divine forces, into what lives and works in all forms of existence. And when one calls to mind what an earlier epoch divined, and is expressed in the words, quote, "grant me a vision of nature's forces that bind the world, all its seeds and sources and innermost life, all this I shall see, and stop peddling in words that mean nothing to me," close quote, footnote, Goethe Faust, Part 1, Scene 1, translation by David Luke, Oxford University Press, 1987, end of footnote, one is impelled to say that this must come to realization in the further course of mankind's development. We rummage and peddle in words with all our knowledge. If we have no insight into the germinal powers, the vital seed forces that build up the human being in the most varied ways, we can therefore say that the system of movement, the metabolic system, the rhythmical system, the system of nerves and senses are one whole that comes together as their sounds upward from below strive to awaken. think in the Spirit. And, from above downward, mingling with the upward striving words, live and create breathing existence. Receive in love the will power of the gods. This receive in love the will power of the gods is the calm creative element in the head. What strives from below upward in think in the Spirit, from above downward in live and create breathing existence, specifically lives and works together in such a way that it creates an image of itself in the way in which human breathing passes over in a rhythmical way into the activity of the blood. And what implants into us the instruments of the senses, this is what streams from above downward in receive in love the will power of the gods. But what works in our walking, in our standing, in our moving of the arms and hands, everything, in fact, which brings man into the manifestation of his element of will, this sounds forth in strive to awaken. Thus you see how man is a symphony of that world word, which can be interpreted at its lowest level in the way I have presented it to you. Then this world word ascends to the higher hierarchies, whose task it is to unfold even more than the world word, in order that the cosmos may arise and evolve. But what these elemental beings have, as it were, summoned into the world is the final reverberation of that creative, upbuilding, form-giving world word, which underlies all activity and all existence. Gnomes. Quote, you dream yourself and shun awakening. I maintain the power of root nature. It creates for me the body of forms. Close quote. Undines. Quote, you think the deeds of angels and know it not. I bestir the water's power of growth. It forms for me substance of life. Close quote. Sylphs, quote, creative might shines to you. You divine it not. You feel its strength and live it not. I quaff the airy force of life. It fills me with the power of being. Close quote. Fire spirits, quote, divine will offers you strength. You accept it not. With its strength you will, yet thrust it from you. I consume the striving power of fire. Into soul spirit it releases me. Close quote. Chorus of gnomes. Strive to awaken. Close quote. Undines. Quote. Think in the spirit. Close quote. Sylphs. Quote. Live and create breathing existence. Close quote. Fire spirits, quote, receive in love the will power of the gods. That is the end of the lecture, but I will add here my attempt at the German. Gnomen, du träumst dich selbst und meidest das Erwachen. Ich halte die Wurzel Wesenskraft, sie schaffet mir den Formenleib. Undinen. Du denkst die Engelwerke und weißt es nicht. Ich bewege die Wasserwachstumkraft. Sie bildet mir den Lebensstoff. Sylphen, dir leuchtet die Schöpfermacht. Du ahnst es nicht. Du fühlest ihre Kraft und lebst sie nicht. Ich schlurfe die luftige Leberkraft, sie fühlet mich mit Seinsgewalt. Feuerwesen, dir kraftet Götterwille, du empfängst ihn nicht, du willst mit seiner Kraft und stoßest ihn von dir. Ich deue die Feuerstreberkraft, sie erlöst mich in Seelengeistigkeit. Gnomenchor, er strebe zu erwachen und Undinen, denke ihm Geiste, Sylphen, lebe schaffen Atmendes das Sein, Feuerwesen, empfange liebend Götter Willenskraft. That is the end of lecture 9 and the end of part 3.